dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. And there are few people who have contributed more mightily to my way of thinking and with greater effect over decades to that war than our first guest. He is the Honorable Donald Rumsfeld, a former everything, including two-time Secretary of Defense, and a man who I've been privileged to know and admire personally and up close for a long time. And it's always a pleasure to have him with us to talk about the state of the free world's war against its several enemies. Mr. Secretary, welcome back. It's great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Frank.
I had the privilege of being in the room the other night in New York City where you were addressing a group of mostly admiring, mostly women, about your new book, Rumsfeld's Rules. And a couple of them really caught my ear as you were speaking, and I thought it might be fun to just talk briefly about one or two of them. You talked about Shimon Peres, the president now of Israel, and his description of a problem. Could you visit with us a little bit about sort of the essence of that idea and how it might be instrumental in understanding the nature of what Israel is confronting and what we should be doing about it?
Well, yes, indeed. I can recall being with Shimon Peres. He was defense minister the first time I was Secretary of Defense, and I'd see him over the years, and one night we were having dinner, and in the course of the discussion, he made a comment something like this. He said that if a problem has no solution, it's not a problem, but a fact, not to be solved, but to be coped with over time. And there's a lot of wisdom in that. Some people see a problem and decide that they have to solve it. And they trip over themselves trying to come to a resolution of it. And there are some things that need to be put aside. I think it was Dwight Eisenhower who said something of a kind. He said, if a problem can't be solved, enlarge it. It puts it into a different context if you look at it in a broader sense.
You have had long experience in your capacities as everything from White House Chief of Staff to two-time Secretary of Defense and, of course, in the private sector as a captain of industry with bureaucracy. And you had a wonderful quote from Hyman Rickover about that phenomenon and how to contend with it. Can you share that with us as well, Mr. Secretary?
Well, indeed. My book, Rumsfeld's Rules, has several quotes from Admiral Rickover. He was, I guess, the longest-serving naval officer in history. But one of the things he said was, if you're going to sin, sin against God, because God forgives. Never sin against the bureaucracy, because it simply lays in wait, and it will eventually get you.
Yeah, and hasn't that been borne out by hard experience for both of us over the years? There is one quote that did not come up the other night, but that is one of my personal favorites, for which you have been roundly criticized. And I've never honestly been able to understand why, other than just sort of personal animus towards you. And that is your comment to the effect, I believe it was in a press conference, that you go to war with the army you have, not the army you'd like to have. If you talk a little bit about, well, first of all, the fundamental reality of that statement and why on earth it's engendered such a criticism.
Well, it's hard to know, except as you suggest, there are some people who get up in the morning and they want to criticize certain approaches or certain philosophies, and they're ideologically opposed, so they grab any twig they can. In that case, it was a press conference, and I'd had a discussion with the commanding officer of the unit I was speaking to overseas, and we were figuring out ways to accelerate the delivery of equipment that had not been previously delivered because it hadn't been requested by the Army. And the truth of the matter is, as you suggest, that every country stands on the shoulders of those who've gone before. We have no capabilities. A president comes into office and the armed forces under his command have no capabilities other than those that were there when he arrived. The lead times on these weapon systems are long. The investment cycle takes a long time with the Congress. And so the truth of the matter is that throughout our history, every president goes to war with the military capabilities that were left by their predecessor. And it is indisputable. It is accurate. It cannot be naysayed, and yet, obviously, there were a group of people in the media who decided to naysay it.
Big time saying of nay. This brings me to a subject that's near and dear to my heart, and I know you've wrestled with a lot over the years, and that is one element of our military capabilities that, really works all the time, not just if, God forbid, it actually ever had to be used, namely our nuclear deterrent. The military we have in that connection, Donald Rumsfeld, is, of course, pretty much the military that the man we both had the privilege of serving, Ronald Reagan, bequeathed to us as a result of the very substantial buildup that he engaged in. It has been aging and, to some extent, atrophying and becoming increasingly problematic in terms of a deterrent capability and our confidence in it, and certainly our allies' confidence in it. Talk, if you would, a little bit about the president's commitment to rid the world of nuclear weapons, starting with ours, and its advisability or, dangerousness.
Well, I think that a little background is useful. If one thinks about World War II and the nuclear weapons that were used, they are perfectly terrible weapons in terms of their impact on humanity and the lives they cost and the radiation effects. And it has to be the goal of any rational person to not have to use them. And one might even give humanity a heck of a lot of credit when you think about it, that nuclear weapons have not been fired in anger since 1945. That is an impressive accomplishment. Now, one might then ask, how did that happen? Well, I think there's a worldwide awareness of the magnitude of those weapons and the danger they impose on humanity. I think it was Einstein who said that if there's a nuclear war, the next war following that will be fought with clubs and rocks. So there's a healthy respect for that. And thanks to successive presidents, and indeed of both political parties since, we have seen a understanding that the reason we've been able to not see the use of nuclear weapons in our world is several. One, because of the awareness of their the dangers of them, but number two, we've been willing to develop deterrents and persuade people that it is not in their interest to use those weapons. And the only way you can develop deterrence is by persuading others that you have the capability to impose damage on them that is too great, that it makes their thought about using those weapons unwise and with a very great clarity. The other thing we've done or tried to do is to work with friends and allies around the world to reduce nuclear proliferation. And the availability of those technologies falling into the hands of people who really may not care about deterrence. They may be willing to sacrifice their lives, as the suicide bombers do. And so
the Iranian regime comes to mind, of course, in this regard.
Exactly. I mean, if you're outer-directed and you're not have any major interest in preserving your lives, like a suicide bomber does not, indeed, they may think that's their role in the world. It's particularly dangerous. So I think that what we have to do is recognize that, yes, they're terrible weapons, but it's been an impressive record that they've not been used. But the reason they've not been used is not because one country has abolished them and another country has promised, a country with a record of lying, has promised that they won't have them either. And yet, the United States and our allies would live up to our promises, whereas other countries very likely would not.
All
and have
of the bad guys.
Exactly.
And I think just to cap this off, Mr. Secretary, we have to let you go. The point really is that it's not just that these weapons haven't been used, but the kind of conflagrations that they ended in the last century have not been repeated. And that is really the extraordinary accomplishment and something I think we need to make sure that we continue to effect by maintaining and assuring the credibility of our deterrent. I know you'll be in the forefront of this fight, as you have been for so many years on so many important ones. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, I appreciate your time with us today and your great service to our country, past, present, and continuing. Keep it up, sir. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Suzanne Schulte next on North Korea, right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.